Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Dale and Keith Show.
We are shaped by our environment.
They're winning too much in Boston now. It's gone to their heads.
In Boston, we expect more. We've been here before.
The clock shows zeros. Rask is helmetless.
Craig, what was your assessment of the Krug hit?
I did not see it.
Just glad I got a haircut.
Dale Arnold.
Tuukka Rask had kind of a rocking chair game.
Rich Keefe.
So I would challenge anybody here at WEEI to a beer chugging challenge.
Dale and Keefe.
I was actually born now in Massachusetts.
You're not a Maine guy?
I was born in
Massachusetts. I thought you were a
Maine guy. On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Fourth and final hour, Dale and Keefe. Sports Radio WEEI. I appreciated Carly Teft reaching out to us.
Yes.
And she was thankful for our shout-out, and we were thankful for her, except she linked to a phony, baloney, fake Dale Arnold Twitter account.
Oh, my God. The
How
world
many
is
are
ripe
there?
With them. There's so many fake Dales out there.
I only know of the
flying
one.
Flying around.
And it's been, you know,
you got to find the blue checkmark Dale.
While.
Blue checkmark Dale is the only Dale out there. He's the only Dale worth following.
Because we suggested Carly could do a pregame concert tomorrow night.
Yeah, and Rossi poo-pooed all over it.
I did
She's
not
trying to be super
totally
nice.
Did. That's my pick.
You were like,
that was my pick.
No,
I don't know what you're talking about.
You said, oh, man, what did she get? Was she on the payroll? That's what you said.
She should be on the payroll. She's doing intros for the shows.
You notice how she was very nice and responded to us, and Rossi's taken on a completely different tune. I was saying how good
then.
She was
at
the national anthem.
About. You were rude about it earlier.
Rossi's like, a little overexposed much. And I was like, Rossi, please.
I've known Carly Teft for probably 10 years.
Right,
I'm a big supporter.
Brag.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
What was
brag.
She, five at the time?
Yeah, I think four.
Yeah,
but the
Lord.
Point of the matter is...
Did you hug her or did you give her a handshake?
Handshake.
And then a hug.
And then, no, then a fist bump.
There you go.
A
weird flex, but okay.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Rossi, for checking in. But so maybe she'll sing something for the show at some point.
Maybe we can get her to do a Dale and Keefe intro.
I love it.
That's a consistent show every day. Well, Wiggy and Bradfo was like, meh.
I heard her anthem for the Wiggy and Bradfo basketball game. Very nice.
It was great. It was very well done.
Thought it was.
She was not lip syncing. I was there live, so I could tell you she
did Fenway
sang
too,
live.
Right?
Yes, the day before.
That's
the day before she did Fenway.
So she's working her way up, is
correct.
What you're
she
saying.
She played a and country festival this past weekend.
Pretty good. Things are looking up. Rossi's apparently your best friend, even though he's talking trash. So
I never talk trash.
We were all saying nice
yes,
things about her. And
yes.
You've talked trash about me.
I absolutely
yes,
have.
Yes,
that wasn't trash.
And
that
we,
was just
and,
an observation.
And we applauded that. So we're all,
I thought it was mean.
I didn't say it was inaccurate.
No,
I just said he did it.
It was unnecessary.
Bruins back on the practice ice early this afternoon over at the TD Garden, as you might expect. Everything's exactly the same. Same line combinations, same defense pairs. Zdeno Chara is out there paired with Charlie McAvoy on the Bruins' first defense pair. Just pointing it out.
Oh, so you know what? I think you're in line for $50. Didn't Wiggy bet? Ultimately, didn't
yes.
it come down to $50? He said he wouldn't be on the top pair, and he was on the top pair. So
yeah.
Somebody's getting $50.
So I heard him. I heard the verbal gymnastics he and Mutt were trying to put together this morning of why they didn't have to pay me.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Here's what they came up with.
Okay. I'll play along.
So Bruce Cassidy, as we mentioned earlier, oftentimes starts his fourth line at the start of the game.
Right.
As kind of an energy boost. You know, they get out there and start thumping
yes.
people right off
yes.
the bat. He used them a lot. In
Does
that.
It all the time.
And so they started the game last night. They were the starting line.
Right.
McAvoy and Chara were the defense pair.
Correct.
So what Wiggy and Mutt came up with is because they started with the fourth line, they're now the fourth defense pair, which, oh, by the way, is not a thing.
Fourth defense pair you never see.
No.
They it doesn't exist. So, yeah, I don't love that one. I don't think that's going to hold up necessarily.
No.
And again, the time on ice is a little bit skewed because of how many power plays they had. Because Torrey Krug ended up having the most time on ice for any of the Bruins, which wouldn't normally be the case.
You know, Charlie McAvoy, play time. That
that's
was
what
the
I'm
difference.
Saying. He had
yeah.
6 minutes and 40 seconds
yeah.
power play. That's ridiculous. So Charlie McAvoy was second. Carlo was third. then Chara was fourth. But that's, again, Carlo and Chara aren't playing any on the power play, and they were only shorthanded. At least Chara was shorthanded a minute 54 seconds on there. So, no, I think it's pretty fair to say that he was on the top power play.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the way, the fan banner captains last night, and they had eight of them. Well, actually, they had nine, because they also had a Special Olympian who was part of their group.
Right.
But the eight who they brought out were Gregory Campbell, Andrew Ference, Chris Kelly, Daniel Paillet, Rich Peverly, Michael Ryder, Dennis Seidenberg, and Sean Thornton. All,
good
obviously,
crew.
Members yeah. of the 2011 Stanley Cup Championship team. They brought all eight of them back. And they all participated as a group.
And they all waved one banner together.
They let the Special Olympian wave the banner, which was really
cool.
They
were all there. So
and they all
good.
Had their towels going.
That was good. And I'll tell you what. So that fourth line, and all those guys were there, Campbell, Thornton, and Paillet, really, really good, really useful. That was even a line sometimes Claude would start those guys. You know,
sure.
We're talking about the – but last night, you know, further proof that that Corrali line with Nordstrom, Achari, and then even Wagner when Wagner was healthy, that group – can do so much more than most fourth lines because you can put them out there and they can defend against the best line of the other team. But they also can create scoring chances. And Corrali's had a bunch of big goals already. Nordstrom hasn't had as many goals as he has had good chances this playoff run. But those guys are steady and reliable and better than the 2011 fourth line, which those guys were great. They were a big part.
The Merlot line, which was their name back then.
And everything else, yeah.
They were a huge part of the Stanley Cup championship. And if you look at
it again,
if you look at the way this team was put together by Don Sweeney, there's a lot of looking back at that 2011 team as well. His acquisitions at the trade deadline were not these knock your socks off kinds of acquisitions. And yet, as you watch it now play out, Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson are huge parts of what they're doing.
And Chris Kelly and Rich Peverly. Now, it didn't end great necessarily for them, and people were getting sick of Kelly and whatever, but they were so important to that team, and it was the same idea where trade deadline that year, they needed to kind of bump up the third line a little bit, just like this year's team. Now, they also needed to go out there and get a defenseman, and they got Cabrelet, who wasn't good. They won in spite of him. But this year's team needed a little bit less, but they got the right pieces in place. And, yeah, they've looked fantastic, especially these last couple of series.
So that is what happened last night at the Garden. Bruins grab a 1-0 lead in the best-of-7 Stanley Cup final. We told you the stats nerds have now given the Bruins an 82.3% chance of winning the Stanley Cup.
Oh, yeah. And even the Vegas nerds, they really changed it too. Minus 160 was the series price going in. After just a game one victory, it's now minus 310.
And so, if they win tomorrow night, it'll go to like minus 410, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the number of teams coming back from a 2-0 deficit in the Stanley Cup final, I can't imagine is too big of a group.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Jerry's on the cell. Hey, Jerry.
Two things, Dale. I need your expertise on trying to help me get to this thought. But before that, I've been blown up once on EEI, and that was a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about the talent level between the first lines comparatively and the third and fourth lines. You guys blew me up, and I just want to say, it looks like it's going to be...
You can't call about the time you got blown up and spend all your time talking about the time you got blown up. You just can't do it. Get to your point. Whatever it is, we'll entertain it. So he's
apparently we won't.
Well, no if you get your point, you don't need to reference the last time I called. I was talking about the lines and
might as well said, please blow me up.
Yes, you're asking for it.
It's like a kick me sign, a radio version of the kick me sign.
It is. Everybody listening to that right now, I can imagine.
I don't remember
happy.
Jerry's particular call, but it sounds as though he was trying to make a case that the fourth line and third lines were more important than the Bruins' first line, which is stupid.
Well, they were better last night.
He wants to use last night
oh,
as,
okay.
Oh, see?
Yeah, yeah,
told
yeah.
you they were better.
Yeah.
No.
No, they're not. Although,
they're not more important.
Although, I'll tell you what. When you put David Backes on the second line, there is an argument to be made that the third line is going to generate more scoring. At least the way that they have gone, I think they're more balanced. Like, Krejci's the best player out of the six when you look at the second, third line. But if I told you Coyle, Johansson, and Heinen were going to consistently get more scoring chances than Krejci, DeBrusk, and Backes, I don't know how you could argue.
There's been a lot of talk, obviously, as the Bruins are now three wins away from winning a cup, about the play of Tuukka Rask. and the superb Twitter site, Boston Sports Info, has broken down 2018-19 Tuukka Rask, 2010-11 Tim Thomas, through the first 18 playoff games, which is where the Bruins sit right now. Through the 18 playoff games, both were 12-6. Tuukka sitting there at 12-6 right now.
Right, right, right.
Tim Thomas was 12-6. Tim Thomas had a 2.29 goals against average. Right. Tuukka Rask, 1.85. Tim Thomas had a 9.29 save percentage. Tuukka Rask is at 9.40. I know I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now, and people think I'm full of crap.
It's been better.
He's better than Tim Thomas was when they won the Cup. Now, none of that matters if they don't finish.
100%.
And I freely admit, none of it matters if they don't get the next three wins. Not in a row, but, you know, win the next the three that they need. But the fact of the matter is, this year's Tuukka Rask is better than that year's Tim Thomas.
Yeah, it is. And people still regard Tim Thomas's as one of the best playoff runs, certainly in recent memory. And he won the Conn Smythe, and they won the Cup and all that, and he deserves that credit. But as time goes on, Tim Thomas's performance gets better. And, oh, by the way, Tuukka Rask, his performance of 2013, as time goes on, gets worse. Where in reality, they're a lot closer to it. And again, that's a great example. Tuukka and the Bruins as a team can't finish the deal against Chicago. And yet you look at his playoff numbers.
They were better too.
Off the charts. They were better. Save percentage, goals against, all of that. And maybe it's kind of close. But that Chicago team versus that Vancouver team, Chicago, to me, a whole lot better. Maybe I'm not giving Vancouver enough credit, but Chicago proved it out. They won three cups in, what, a six-year span. They had that top elite talent. And so, and then even go the round previous, what Tuukka Rask did to Pittsburgh that year. So Tuukka is not getting any credit for that. And I get it. You win all the time. We're talking about, you know, Boston winning three out of four titles this year. So you're not going to celebrate teams that come in second. But Tuukka in 2013 was pretty good. Because I keep hearing all the, you know, NHL experts are on the pregame shows, you know, last night, and, you know, the intermission reports. People are asking, is this the best you've ever seen Tuukka Rask play? And their knee-jerk reaction is, oh, yeah, far and away this is the best. And you're like, well, okay, the team is in a position to finish the deal, but it wasn't that long ago.
2013, he was great.
He played like this. And then they, as a team, and he was a part of it, they weren't able to finish the deal, so now all of a sudden he wasn't nearly as good, and people just kind of dismissed that season.
What will the Tuukka detractors say if the Bruins finish it off, if Tuukka Rask completes the task?
I already got it.
Not only does he win wins the Stanley Cup, but we'll even play it out. He wins the Conn Smythe Trophy, because he probably will if they win the Cup.
Most likely.
So what's left for them to say then?
They will say Carolina and St. Louis didn't deserve to be there, and they were terrible. That's my guess. I'm not going to say that, of course. Yeah. I think Tuukka, once he wins the Cup, he wins the Cup, and then that conversation is over. I don't care who you face, but when they, it's not like you beat, you know, the Sedins and, you know, Ryan Kessler and that Canucks team that I think was the President's Cup trophy winner and all that stuff. You're playing a team that didn't even get to 100 points in the regular season. That'd be my guess as to what they would say.
I do think there's a reason why Thomas gets more of the love from fans than Tuukka does, and it has to do with styles.
Tim Thomas was the
swashbuckler. He was diving around. He was Dominic Hasek. You know, he's flying here and flying there. Tuukka Rask is a technician, very sound in his fundamentals. It always looks as though the puck is just hitting him, and primarily that's because he's in the right place. He's where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be. But it doesn't look the same. It doesn't look as flashy.
If you have a highlight reel save, doesn't that mean you were just out of position? Like, doesn't that mean
not always, but oftentimes that's true.
A lot of times. Like, when you're flopping around the net and you have a glove save and you're on your back and all that other stuff and it's chaos and there's a scrum in front of the net, all of that stuff usually means maybe you're a little out of position. Or that's just, like you said, that's sort of the style. You know, if you're looking at, like, Dominic Hasek versus Martin Brodeur and you're sort of contrasting the two, like, the numbers might look the same, but how they get about it is not the same. And between Thomas and Rask, it's very similar. And that's why I think a lot of people are surprised when you look at it and say, wait a minute, so Tuukka's numbers are better? And by the way, the 2011 team was so much more focused on defense, and that was a bigger priority to them. Not that this Bruins team isn't good defensively, but the way the NHL is right now and the way that they play, they're scoring more goals, and you would think would also be allowing more goals. Whereas 2011... you put that Chara-Seidenberg pairing out there. That was as good of a lockdown defensive pair as you were going to get. And just the nature of that team, they weren't going to score as many goals. There was going to be more 1-0, 2-1 games than you got this season. And yet, Tuukka still has better numbers.
I think you can make an argument that Tim Thomas also had better defense in front of him than Tuukka Rask has this year.
That's what I'm saying.
You had Chara Seidenberg as the one, but you had Johnny Boychuk was part of this. Andrew Ferentz was part of this. Adam McQuaid, a younger, you know, less beat up Adam McQuaid, was part of the whole thing. I'm not sure Caberle. If I count Mark Stewart or Matt Barkowski or Thomas Caberle.
Don't you think part of it, too, is what Claude Julien prioritized versus what Bruce Cassidy does? And I'm not saying Bruce is like, hey, just run up there. Who cares about defense? I'm not trying to say that. But Claude famously wanted to just shut teams down and play that style. And hence why you saw Tim Thomas win the Vezina under him, Tuukka win the Vezina under him. Those guys, and they're both great goalies, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But in that system, you put an NHL-caliber goalie, his numbers were probably going to be pretty good with the defense in front of him. And then even guys like Bergeron and defensive-minded forwards on that team.
Now, the numbers that we gave you from Boston Sports Info were through three rounds, through the first 18 playoff games. It really was the final that took Tim Thomas from here to there. I mean, in the final, when he goes out and beats the very, very good Vancouver Canucks, they were the best team in hockey that year, and wins in seven games, and the way he played and the numbers that he put up. As we've said in the past about Thomas, through the first two rounds, he was kind of...
He was fine.
But then, when you got to Tampa Bay and
Vancouver... Yeah, if you finish that way, that's even easier to be remembered so fondly. Right, again, if you go back to 2013, Tuukka Rask was so good in the Eastern Conference Finals, but then that gets sort of overshadowed because you don't win the most important games and you leave with a sour taste in everybody's mouth.
My guess is that even the Tuukka detractors are probably going to have to turn their attention somewhere else. Maybe it's Zdeno Chara.
Could be.
Seems to have been the guy that...
Yeah.
But again, if they finish this thing off and Zdeno Chara is the captain of two Stanley Cup championship teams, Bruins don't have one of those, by the way. The 1970 Bruins team didn't have a captain. They had three alternate captains. He'll be the only captain of two Stanley Cup championship teams here.
Pretty good.
Not sure what you can say about that either.
No, I know.
Rob's in Rhode Island. Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Hey, Dale. Hey, Rich.
What's up?
Just want to tell you, first of all, I really enjoy listening to your show. I'm on the road a lot, and I pick it up all over the place. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Just three quick comments. The first one, I think the Bruins are 13-5 versus 12-6.
Yeah, I was talking about through the first three rounds. Yeah. Through the first 18 games.
Got it. Secondly, I tell you, you could definitely see a change in the Bruins' play between the first and second periods last night. I mean, it took them a period to get going and everything, even though it had a couple of good power play chances in the first period. They were back to their old selves periods two and three last night. They are relentless. You know, all four lines, everybody can do everything. Their back checking is awesome. They're relentless. And I don't see it going more than five games, honestly. They're definitely a better skilled team than St. Louis is. And my last comment concerns Bill Buckner. And I was 24 back in 86 and remember it well. Like you do, Dale. I know Rich, you're too young for that, but I never said that Buckner should not have been on the field. He went through hell just to get onto the field during that season. And I felt terrible like everybody else did when they lost, but McNamara wanted him on there. And Dale, I know you differ in your opinion on this.
He was dead wrong putting him out there in that position.
I feel differently. I mean, maybe I'm being too sentimental, but I really think that he deserved to be out there when they won it. And it wasn't a ball that was to his right or left. It was right to him. It's not something that his mobility limited him to get to the ball. And it went right through his legs.
I think the problem, Rob, where I disagree with you, is McNamara had been substituting for him defensively late in games for the whole month of September. All the way through the playoffs.
And then now all of a sudden the most important time.
And I understand the sentimental idea of letting him be on the field, but you're trying to win a World Series here.
Like in 04.
And by the way, and you were trying to break, well, how long was the drought at that point?
But still a good
chunk. It was real long.
Like in 04, they didn't say, hey, we want Kevin Millar to be out there at first base. Like, no, put Doug Minkiewicz in there. That's what he does. But do you think that if what happened to Bill Buckner happened in today's age with Twitter and with the 24-hour radio and TV, do you think things would have played out similar, better, worse?
Worse.
I wonder about that.
In the social media age we live in, it would have been even more viral.
I disagree, though, because I think it ended up taking on a life of its own. But I think in today's age, we're looking at all of it, and there would have been enough of a crowd saying, let's say he fields the ball and steps on first. They hadn't won the game. The game was tied. It right. wasn't his fault. There was a whole meltdown in that inning, and it wasn't all because of him. I think he might have benefited from enough people going back through it. And yeah, he would have been one of the reasons why they lost that one game. But guess what? They had a game 7, too, and they blew that. So I just think it took on such a life of its own, and maybe not everybody was even aware of the facts. Like, 2 decades later, people are still talking about it, and they kind of lost sight of all the details of the game.
Matt's in Gloucester. Hey, Matt.
What's up,
I'm
Matt?
I'm not listening anymore. I've killed myself.
Dude, this is the worst show on the radio, man.
I'm dead.
Oh, come on. Zing. He didn't like the Buckner breakdown? I thought he would have liked that.
It's a little morbid to say that right after that.
I These know.
Guys, really classless.
It's not. I don't like that at all. That really hurt. That one stung.
I don't know if I can go
on. We need to write a poem about it, maybe.
Oh, there's an idea.
We'll call the morning after pill. We'll give those guys a shout, and then we'll get right back on track.
When we come back in just a couple of minutes, you'll hear some of the Mark Savard interview. He joined us at 11:30 today and had some interesting things to say about the end of his career and comparing it to what may or may not be the end of Dustin Pedroia's career. We'll also get back to the calls at 617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keith, but we're ready to trend.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, I mean, he's been great. I mean, he's looked a little lethargic at times. I remember the Toronto series when guys picked on him a bit. But, you know, he's 42, and he's the biggest guy in the league. But his reach, again, I can count numerous times last night where he broke up some plays just with that reach. And it doesn't hurt to have a young Charlie McAvoy on your other side. I mean, they're such a good pairing. V doesn't try and do too much, and I think that's why he's been so successful. He keeps it easy. He knows that if he moves the puck over to McAvoy and slides in behind him, McAvoy's going to do most of the work as long as he can stay back, use that reach, and be physical and block shots like he did last night.
Former Boston Bruins star Mark Savard, who joined us earlier in the program, second time during the Stanley Cup playoffs that he's joined us. Yeah, he was with us before he came back to be the fan banner captain.
Yeah,
he, for one of the
early
games.
Before the series even started against Toronto, right?
Yep.
He was back, so that was good to hear from him. And obviously he's linked with Chara. Yeah, they came over together, and then they played a long time together. But even he kind of hesitates a little bit when talking about the player he is now. You know some of the things that he says.
Well,
like,
he's
well, he's 42.
Yeah, he's not what he was when he was 32. Or...
But he says, and he's right. And we had somebody else on, too. You know, actually, it might have been Ray Bourque talking about it, where, you know, playing with Charlie McAvoy really helps. And you look around the league, and there's a lot of top pairings where one guy is obviously the superior player, and then for the other guy, it just makes things a whole lot easier for him. So that has been a really good pairing all season long.
So as it turns out, we had the press conference yesterday at Fenway Park featuring Dave Dombrowski, Alex Cora, and Dustin Pedroia. And while Dustin Pedroia did not announce his retirement from the game because of injury, he did, when asked, do you see yourself playing baseball again? And he said, I don't know. I mean, it's literally at that point. And it got us thinking about the end of Savard's career, and whether or not this is the end of Pedroia's career is up in the air, but eventually it's going to happen, and that led Rich to his question for Savard.
No, Mark, you know, unfortunately your career ended prematurely due to injury, and we're seeing something similar right now with Dustin Pedroia. Now, the injuries are certainly very different, but it's keeping him from playing. He just had a press conference yesterday. He's played in 9 total games the last 2 seasons. He clearly wants to play, but his body is not letting him. Just how difficult was that for you, and what were sort of the steps to sort of really understand that your career was over, and then but you had to go on?
Yeah, it took a while. It really did, and it was a tough run. And I you know understand what he's going through right now. It's definitely not easy. You want to be there. You want to help, and that's the player, and that's all you ever knew since you were a kid. So it takes a long time. I don't know if you ever really get over it. It's you know something I still think about on a regular basis. That you know I wish I could have played a little longer and done a little more in my Boston career. But looking back, I'm pretty fortunate, and I think that's what he's got to realize. He's had a great career already. You know, I got four beautiful kids and a great wife, and I'm very lucky. And I cherish those things more now, and I'm really enjoying life. I've been able to put that chapter behind me. It took a long, long time. I got to be honest, and it's going to take him a long time too. And I'm not saying that he's done, but it's going to take a while. It's always something like you grow up, you play street hockey, you do everything, and your life's devoted to being a professional athlete, and all of a sudden it ends abruptly. So I understand what he's going through. It's tough, but at the end of the day, now that I look back, it was all worth it.
Every athlete knows when they begin their professional career that there will be an end to it. That's not the question here. Is it the fact that you don't get to decide how it ends?
Yeah, I think that was the toughest part. A lot of guys get to go out on their own or they just don't get re-signed, I guess. But at the end of the day, when it ends abruptly, not because of your decision, because of, another player's decision, it makes it definitely that much tougher. But like I said, I'm in a happy place. I've been able to get past all that stuff now, and I'm really looking forward to my future and doing stuff ahead. If this weather ever gets good up here in Canada so I can golf more, I'd be very happy. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for that to happen. But again, I'm glued in on these playoffs. Obviously the Raptors up here are having a good run, so there's a lot of stuff to watch on TV, which is nice.
I think he's got a real perspective, and more than anything else, like Rob Gronkowski may have retired because of back issues. I mean, he didn't say that, but ultimately, he may be thinking, you know what, I just can't go through this anymore.
Right.
All that I have to go through, and I'm going to tell you right now that I'm out.
Right.
He's still kind of making the decision. In other words, doctors weren't saying to him, no, Rob, you can't play anymore. It's not in your hands. You aren't allowed to play anymore.
Yeah, a team is certainly not telling him no, and a doctor's not telling him no. I mean, maybe there's more restrictions on it, like you said, but if Gronk, from what we know, the knowledge that we have, if Gronk really wanted to play week one next year, he probably could.
He could.
Now, would he be
physically
hurt?
He could. I don't know. But
would it be affecting him long term? Probably, and all these things. But for Mark Savard, and then obviously the scariest, listen, a knee injury is terrible, and limping around potentially for the rest of your life is horrible, right? But what Mark Savard's dealing with is next level. Like when you've had the multiple head injuries to that degree, that is so scary. And yet that's where he is, and he admits that it was a really difficult time for him, because he was, when did he play his last game? 33, probably, years old, that last year in 2011. So he definitely felt like he had a lot of years left. Pedroia probably feels like even he at 35, whatever he is, feels like he has time left, but it's just not the case. Like, it's just that your body's not going to allow you to do it.
In Savard's case, basically, although he did try to play some after that, his career was basically ended by a Matt Cook hit. I mean, that was the end of it, although he tried.
Yeah, and then didn't Hunwick hit him, wasn't it?
Didn't yeah.
Did he get another hit after that? You're like, oh, my God.
But basically, that was the play.
Yeah,
The Matt Cook play was the play that ended his career.
Oh, yeah.
In the case of Dustin Pedroia, if this is indeed the end, and we don't know that, but if it is, we're probably going to say it was the Manny Machado slide that ended things for him. Although he did, rehabilitate and had surgery and came back and tried to play and has played 9 games over the last 2 years. If his career is over, it's that slide that you're going to say ended it.
Right. And then what's also different about baseball, too, is you have you're under contract and you're getting every penny you're guaranteed. Whereas when a football player, there's less opportunity for a guy to really hold on. Like those teams, they agree to some sort of settlement. They either retire, the player gets cut, or whatever, like whatever happens. Whereas in baseball, it's different. When Pedroia got hurt, you're looking at it like, what, he got 4 years left on his deal? So what are they going to do? They tried him last year, didn't work, still gets paid. Tried him this year, didn't work, still gets paid. And then is under contract for 2 more years. So it's a really kind of weird spot for he and the franchise to be in. But again, you go back to yesterday's press conference, the first time that he seemed defeated. All the other time you could see.
He sure sounded it.
He's done. But he, even though everything was kind of pointing us in the direction that he was probably done, like all the setbacks that he had and everything else, He was pretty adamant that I'm going to be out there. Like, I feel pretty good today, and there's going to be more days like this, and I'm going to be able to play. But the reality is that's not going to happen. Like, he's not. He doesn't want to do any more surgeries, and he's thinking about his long-term health as well. It just seems like this injury, this isn't just an ACL where guys get them. They're used to the procedure, 9 months, a year, whatever, you're back out there. This is different, and it is – He admitted before nobody's come back from this injury, and I guess we're finding out why.
And he wanted to be that guy. He feels his entire career has been bucking the odds.
Oh yeah,
you know, undersized. He always played with the chip on his shoulder because he felt he had to do it. You can think of other athletes like that, even now in town.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy who delivered the big hit last night,
Torrey
Crew, is a guy who plays with that chip on his shoulder, that edge to his game as well. But as much as you might want to fight your way through this, he had to tell the trainers in his minor league start on Friday, you know what, I got to come out. I can't do this.
No, as soon as he saw that, you know, he left a game early, and then they had a game the next day, and he wasn't in the lineup for that one. And he said, all right, well, this is really about it. And then, you know, the press conference with Cora and Dombrowski, and so they're sort of addressing it. Now, I don't know what Dombrowski's plans are going forward, like when you start to look at the team and how the team is affected by this. My guess is he's just going to be placed on the DL for the rest of the year and then maybe try to figure it out after that as to what kind of transaction. He's still going to make every penny, but you got to figure out transaction, roster space, all that stuff.
I mean, my guess is they weren't planning on anything anyway. You know, they wanted him to come back. They were hoping he'd come back. But you couldn't, if you're Alex Cora and Dave Dombrowski, you couldn't be saying, well, we'll be getting Pedroia back in June. We'll be good then.
Yeah, you would hope not. I mean, although this is a team that a couple of years ago said, hey, Pablo Sandoval's back. He'll be our third baseman. We can trade Travis Shaw, and we got Pablo Sandoval. Like, that was a mistake. They were banking on him. And so Pedroia, I don't think so, because they had Holt and Nunez both back. So you figured you could have the position covered there. And then Michael Chavis, I don't think they anticipated this, but you also have him worked in. And so you won the World Series without him. Like, he played all last season. You didn't have him except for three games. So you won it without him. You didn't need him back. You thought, all right, maybe he can be a little bit of an upgrade over Holt. But that's turned into Chavis, and that's going to be his job for the rest of the year, I would assume.
My guess is you won't see him play another game in a Red Sox uniform or any other uniform.
No.
He will begin and end his career as a member of the Boston Red Sox. And unfortunately, we might have kind of seen the beginning of the end yesterday.
You know what is absolutely amazing is David Ortiz was never an MVP. Manny Ramirez was never an MVP. Dustin Pedroia was an American MVP. League MVP. Unbelievable. Great, great career. I mean, he's not a Hall of Famer or anything like that, but he had a tremendous career. And yeah, yesterday really felt like without it officially being over, it's over.
He was sort of the Brad Marchand of baseball without the suspensions.
Yeah.
You know, the trash-talking, cocky,
right. Oh, if you were on another team, you'd hate him. Like, if you were a fan of any other team, you'd be obnoxious.
What was the pitch? Came in at 98, left at 112.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
I mean, the whole thing.
And by the way, Red Sox fans loved him for it. They loved the chip on his shoulder and the way he played the game and the attitude. They loved everything about it. Until that wasn't me, that's them.
As soon as you side with Manny Machado, of all people, and the Orioles over your own guys, that's a mistake, and people aren't going to really take kindly to that.
What else you got coming up in just a couple of minutes? Then OMF at the top of the hour, Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEE.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, let's get to a couple of things we haven't yet touched upon during the course of the program.
What else you got?
So last night, the fan banner captains, there were actually 9 of them. One was a Special Olympian named Liam O'Brien. And the other 8 were members of the Boston Bruins 2011 Stanley Cup Championship team. like Sean Thornton and Daniel Paille and Gregory Campbell and Michael Ryder. Anyway, they had eight of them out there, which was really cool. One of whom was Andrew Ferentz. Boston fans love them. Some Andrew Ferentz in this town. And he recorded a little message before the game.
All right, Andrew Ferentz, I'm a retired old guy. I'm kind of an employee at the NHL. I'm probably supposed to be neutral, but tonight I'm not neutral. I'm fully biased for the NHL's best team ever, the NHL Boston Bruins. Got game one. I've got a lot of my old teammates here from the 2011 Stanley Cup winning team. We've got Liam from the Special Olympics. He's going to wave this flag out there and get the fans all fired up. Canal Street was hopping tonight with all the fans, so this place is ready to explode. I can't wait. Enjoy the game.
So he's not biased, and he's not
not at all.
He's not going to pretend that he's unbiased.
My favorite Andrew Ferentz moment, of course, is when he had the equipment malfunction in Montreal. It appeared as though he was giving the crowd the bird, but he actually just had an issue with his glove.
Actually, when I talked to him about it for the book that I wrote, he said, "Oh no, he was totally giving."
Oh,
he
didn't have a
bird.
Glove issue.
Oh no, he
that's
was
weird. I could have sworn it was a glove
he got
problem.
Fined for it.
No, I know.
Lived in the North End at the time. He said he got home and taped on the door of his apartment was envelopes with cash in them.
Oh, they took care of it.
His neighbor said, "You're going to get fined for this. Here, we're going to help you pay the fines."
He needed it.
But he just liked the whole symbolism.
Oh, it was great.
People in the North End saying, "Hey, we got your back, Andrew."
Absolutely.
What else you got?
Well, this series against the Cleveland Indians started yesterday, supposed to continue tonight, although that could be up in the air.
It's a little moist out there right now.
It's not great. And then they'll play tomorrow. But in the booth, Joe Castiglione and Chris Berman. Boomer was on the call yesterday for the first time this season with the Red Sox. Here's what it sounded like.
J.D. Martinez is a back. And it is off the top of the wall for a home run in right field off the little wall in front of the bullpen. And it went doink into the bullpen of the Indians and a home run Martinez.
Pinball.
We've seen it all. Bad shoes. Pinball. Oh, wow. Well, that's that low wall out there you fans are so familiar with.
You got the back, and a doink in one call.
He brought up an interesting point because at one point during the game, the Cleveland Indians made a pitching change. The pitcher came in and wanted new shoes.
Well, yeah, he popped the shoes off. I saw that. I was like,
in his
stocking
feet out on the field. Here's a thought.
Yeah.
When you go to work, have the shoes you need to work.
Have the shoes. You're always told bring the shoes that you need. If you have to swap them out, you can swap them out. But you probably should have had a pretty good idea of what you needed. So Berman, again, weather permitting on the call tonight. We do have a weather update, though, Dale, as it relates to Fenway Park tonight.
It's going to rain.
Okay. So thank you very much, Ollie.
That was kind of quick.
Well, that's not good. Pretty decisive, though. He's not hedging his bets there. Also, this is a sad anniversary, Dale. I know we don't like to do sad things on What Else You Got. Today is
we try to stay away from them.
Today,
just that one time I led with a death story.
That was hard to respond to, wasn't it?
On the whole segment.
This is the 3-year anniversary from when Harambe was murdered. Harambe,
thanks
of course, just saying. Harambe, may he rest in peace, was a beautiful gorilla in the Cincinnati Zoo. And some idiot fell into his cage. And rather than talking it out or just going to rescue the kid or reasoning with Harambe, they shot him in the face in front of everybody and he died.
One of the more horrifying
things.
Could you maybe add more details to make this sound even worse?
He was walking over
there. And they shot him in the face.
Harambe, smarter than most people in the world. And the kid comes falling through because the parents are horrible parents and the kid is an idiot. And the kid starts walking over to Harambe. Harambe went over there to help save and protect the child.
I think so.
100% he did. And they're like, get the guns out! Shoot him in the brain! So then they murder Harambe. Blood and brain splattered everywhere.
Oh,
this kid screaming. Guess what, kid?
I was
your
wrong.
Fault.
He can make
parents,
it worse.
Parents, your fault. And then
do you have one of those free Harambe shirts?
I would like one. I would like one. That is so bad, though. Like, I don't think people made a big enough deal about that. That is a beautiful creature. And it was like a day after his 17th birthday. So he just got his driver's permit. And he was just ready to go. He had his GED locked up. He's ready to go. His whole life ahead of him. And because a kid fell through, I'm telling you, I'm very anti-zoo. I know they do some good things. I know they protect some animals out
there.
Are
aquariums okay?
Yes.
Unless you go over the wall into the penguin bin.
Although I'm not a fan of SeaWorld, Dale.
No, I would say not.
I don't like that.
There's plenty of documentaries to give you a reason.
That's what I'm saying. It's real bad.
I got to go behind the scenes of the penguin exhibit at a zoo. See, at an aquarium. That was a lot of fun.
I do love penguins.
Got to hold penguins, pet penguins, feed penguins.
Did you fall into a penguin pit?
No, I got to walk back in there.
They didn't have you shoot any gorillas, did they?
We did not shoot any. No animals were harmed in the making of this fantasy.
That really did make me sick when that happened 3 years ago. I remember like, oh my God. And this isn't one of those like, oh, they escaped and they were causing havoc and it looked like a scene out of Rampage. Like, it wasn't like that. This guy was just minding his own business. Kid comes flying through and he's like, all right, let me help you out. Nope, I'm dead. Unbelievable. You wake up in the morning.
Did he actually think, nope, I'm dead?
Nope, dead now. Now I'm dead. And that's the story of Harambe. May he rest in peace.
You know what? I'm now off the hook for once starting one of these segments.
I ended it.
On a down note.
I ended it. It's the anniversary. I'm just pointing it out there. I miss you so much, Harambe. Good night, sweet prince.
So let me get this straight.
Wait,
programming note.
You don't want to end the show like
good
that?
Good night, sweet prince is sort of the walk-off line.
Come on, Rossi. What are you doing? That was the perfect end of the show. And then what do you want to say?
We're done.
Well done, Jason.
No, a quick look behind
good
the curtain.
Job.
All right, let me have it again. Dump your part, what you just said. Good night, sweet prince. Rossi, play another anything. Oh, my goodness. Goodbye. Harambe!
Stopping by. Goodbye.
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 Thank you.
We're stopping by.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.